Hey guys, and welcome to Two Ladies in the Kingdom podcast with Emma and Sylvie. We're expanding the format a little bit, and we're going to be doing solo podcasts as well as the podcast together. This first one is actually a live stream on the road, driving from Chiang Mai down to Pattaya, so you're going to hear a little bit of background noise, and when I'm reading aloud questions, those are people who were on the live stream with me. Asking questions as we were driving. So I hope you guys enjoy it and look out for the solo podcast as well as when the two ladies are together. Enjoy. Hello. We are live streaming from driving in the car down to Pattaya from Chiang Mai this morning. And we are kind of in the middle of the country at the moment. Last night, I fought at Loy Krow, and I fought the night before as well, also at Loy Krow. So I've had four fights in 2 weeks, both pairs back to back, because driving up to Chiang Mai is really far. So trying to get as many fights in as possible in that time is the best way to do it. So as you can see, I've got a little bit of a black eye here and a little bit of a scratch. Basically, I think that's from the tape of Tenon Chinook's glove in the first fight from 2 days ago. But other than that, not really that sore, and feeling pretty good. It's just sitting in the car. When I get out of the car tonight, I'm gonna be sore from sitting in the car. I'm pretty happy with my last two fights. On Wednesday, I fought Tenon Chinook Gelson Ritt. She's been world champion at 108 pounds, which is two weight classes above me, for like 4 years. She's an awesome fighter. She's really slick and stylish. I'm actually really a huge fan of Tenon Chinook. And I've fought her twice before in the last 4 years. So the last time I fought her was almost 2 years ago, which is crazy. It doesn't feel like it was that long ago.
What was the first time you fought her?
The first time I fought her, I was up at Lana Muay Thai, and they took us out to Lampang for fights, which is where she's from, and she's like the champ of Lampang. And she, like, the gamblers were coming up to me and looking at me, and they were like, oh my god, you can't fight this girl, you're too small. So it was, I was not really mentally prepared at that time in my experience as a fighter, but it was one of my favorite fights at the time because she was such a challenge. And it was not really a close fight, but there were moments in it that there were glimpses of ways that I could have done better, which was really motivating for me. So I kind of held her in my mind as like, when I get better, I'm gonna rematch.
And we had no idea who she was.
Not Chinook. I didn't know who she was when we first fought her. Because we were in Lampang, everybody knew who she was. And so then I came to know who she was over maybe the next year and a half, and then I fought her again. And that time it was much closer, and I think that I was, again, in the same way, like, super motivated by having made these small mistakes that I could tell I could fix. And so when I found out that I was going to fight her again this week, that was when I realized it had almost been 2 years. I didn't realize it had been that long, but I felt pretty confident that the way that I've changed as a fighter in those 2 years was going to make it a very different fight.
What were those mistakes?
My mistakes in the last fight that we had, I did really well in wearing her out in the clinch, but I kind of didn't smell the blood and like jump on her and finish it at the moments that I really had her kind of weakened. And she's such an experienced and confident, slick fighter. She can pull out of that. Like, she can take a stumble and come out of it and still look great. Whereas at the time, I was really not that good at recovering from stuff like that, so I really had to push her. And so when I pushed her and she kind of stumbled backwards and was catching her balance, I didn't come forward to push her again. That's metaphorical. Then in this fight, I felt like I've gotten much better at kind of recognizing when my pressure on an opponent is able to be capitalized on. And to really kind of jump on top of that. So I felt like how I've changed as a fighter, that was going to be better in this fight. And it was. For the first two rounds, if you watch the live stream that's on my page right now, you'll hear Kevin chastising me for not clinching her in the first two rounds, because the plan was to like get her tired. But the reason I'm okay with having not done that is that what I'm working on for myself right now is trying to be more free in the ring, and this is largely mental, but just having freedom of movement and confidence and trying to, like, work through things, and in the exact same way that I wasn't ready to beat Tenon Chinook last time, where I couldn't recover from these little things, I'm working on kind of forcing myself into uncomfortable situations in order to recover from them, in fights, so with pressure. So even though these first two rounds were kind of easy for Tenon Chinook, like, I was not really pressuring her in the way that I should if I was like, I'm gonna win this fight, no doubt. It was really good for me because I got to experiment and kind of be in the sandbox under a lot of pressure against a really high level, like Mount Rushmore opponent. So that was really good for me. And then she did get tired because I made her tired. And when you get someone tired, their kicks get lower. The things that you're trying to do become easier to land. And so when I had her in positions that were more dangerous for her, I was able to kind of like suck her into it a little bit more. So that was really good. I was really proud of that win because it's a like pin in my progress bar of like, this is a moment that I had proof of progress, which is really cool. And I really like Tenon Chinook. She's bigger than me a little bit, so I'm hoping that they want a rematch, like vengeance, and maybe I can have her come down and wait a little bit. But so that was the night, that was on Wednesday night, and then I fought the next night at the same stadium against a girl who I fought last week in my other pair of fights, and she's quite large. She's like 54, 55 kilos. But again, what was really cool about that fight was that because I'd fought her the week before, and coming off of just having this great win against Tenon Chinook, I knew she knew how to fight me now because I fought her last week. And her gym is Petongpong, that all-female gym that I love and talk about all the time in Mayrim. So not only do they know how I fight, they were at my fight the night before and saw me beat Tenon Chinook and know exactly what hurts. They knew I had this. Like, it was totally this, you're making adjustments. That forces me to make adjustments too, which is so great about rematching people. And so I think I fought better this time around than I did against her last week. I was a little bit like zombie-like or sleepy, just kind of energetic, I guess, in the last fight. And I was better this time, but she was also coming at me harder, which was really cool. So really great pair of fights with like very different obstacles in them.
Petongpong, that you go there, you go to her gym.
So,
yeah.
Onyx is asking me a question.
Oh.
How did you measure the risk of entering into the clinch with Gyo Sum Rit given her tenacity and her handwork in boxing? You can actually see in that fight a couple of times when I'm not entering into the clinch that great. The thing is, I believe in my guard a lot more now than I did the last time I fought her. And the last time I fought her, she threw a lot of elbows at me, and they didn't land, which means that my guard was pretty good. But it's a difference in confidence. My guard is different now than it was then. And so I felt like staying closer to her was a better option, even though that's a dangerous range because her strikes are so crisp and fast, and she throws combinations. So I guess the risk of entering the clinch is a range. So when I'm this far away, it's dangerous. And then on the way in for a second, it's dangerous. But once I'm inside, it's all me. Because from my experience, she's not super strong in the clinch. So my risk assessment is don't spend a lot of time in that middle range. Just get in and do as much damage as I can inside. But I landed a couple of really good punches on her, which I'm happy about because it's been a little bit of a long process of me getting my hands going, but I think that they're more accurate now than they've been before. So even though I'm not throwing a lot of punches, I'm landing punches when I do throw them, which is good in terms of developing. But the gym I fought last night, Petongpong, this all-female gym in Mayrim, I go see them when I'm in Chiang Mai and work with. They're kind of all-star fighter, Petli La. She is a clinch fighter. She's 14 years old. She's a little bit bigger than me. We haven't fought. But she's kind of a phenom. Like, she fights the same girls I fight. She wins a lot, and she's just really, really strong, clinching and kneeing. And she fought the night before, the same night I fought with Tanan Chinook, and she fought, an opponent much larger than herself, and so she was kind of forced to fight in a way that I don't think she normally fights in, and her adjustments were really, really good. She fought against a Westerner, so, she was able to use her clinch advantage, really strongly. But so it's interesting that I'm fighting against Pe Tung Pong because I've fought against them for years, but usually against Nong Ying, who's their, like, Farong smasher, and sometimes against, you know, like, one of their fighters here and there. But now that I go and I work with them and I have a relationship with them and I, like, talk to their trainer online and stuff, it's interesting to have a friendly relationship with a gym that you're also fighting against. And I don't feel like there's a conflict there. I don't feel like I have to hate my opponents or, like, that we have to, like, not talk to each other before or anything like that. I go and I say hi. But what's so interesting about it is that my motivation is to get those girls better at clinch. It's to come up and teach them things that have worked for me and work with them because it's really, really important to be able to work with people who have different styles than yourself. And they're kind of isolated as an all-female gym. I don't think they have a lot of exposure to other women other than when they're fighting. So it's interesting to, after a fight, have a slight compulsion to go be like, this is the lock that I was using. And the night before, I had watched Petli La kind of use a lock that I had worked with her on like a month ago, which was really, really cool to see. So it's interesting. It's like...
You might face... the girl that you taught the lock to.
I think I will eventually face Petli La, because of my relationship with the gym. I think it won't be right away.
Yeah, she's older.
But it's exciting. It's like training the person that you're gonna fight. And she's, you know, I get to see her every now and then, so I'm watching her development as well. It's totally not me, like, as a crew teaching her things, but it's like we're developing together with this knowledge. That in the future we might be fighting each other. Duncan had my first fight in Koh Lanta this week. Reading my blog, especially posts on mindset, really helped me. That is awesome. Today in America is my brother's birthday, so yesterday for me. So I just actually finished talking with my family on a Google Hangout. And my brother is a mindset coach. He's a sports psychologist. And it's kind of amazing when I talk to him about what I'm discovering about mental training, because this is his job and this is his wheelhouse. He's always like, oh man, yeah, that's totally right. That's, you know, this is this thing that I work with my clients on and stuff like that. So I'm going to try to do more mental training blog posts for sure. So if you guys have specific questions, please do let me know. I'll ask my brother because I'm not an expert on everything, but I'm definitely getting a lot of experience in that realm, and growing a lot in that realm. So I'm very happy that that's helpful to people, because I did not have that for a long time. And realizing how important it is like the first huge step, is knowing how important that is. So that's really good. And in these last two fights, actually, maybe even these last four fights in the last 2 weeks, the mental aspect of it, I think, was 90%, if not more, of the issue. There was a long layoff of me not fighting for over 30 days, which for me is a really, really long time. And so 2 weeks ago when I came up to Chiang Mai to fight, I kind of felt like I haven't fought in a while. I'm experienced enough that I know that I'm not, like, it's not going to be a determining factor that I haven't fought in a long time, but mentally it can be a little bit difficult. And then my opponent was not who I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be this girl from Leong Prasert Gym, who I've never fought before, and it ended up being Nong Ben's Sita Buad, who I have fought before, and she is one of the heaviest kickers I've ever faced. She kicks really hard. So when I saw that it was Nong Ben's, literally an hour before my fight, I had to mentally prepare in that moment to fight her rather than having prepared for it on the way up or anything like that. And I think that it affected the fight a little bit, and that I was more cautious than I needed to be or should have been. But that's a learning experience that helped me the next night in not repeating that mistake with my next opponent, and then fighting Tenanchinook, the world champion, and then fighting again this much larger opponent the next night, who had bashed up my ankle last week and it was still hurting from last week, and then she fucking went after it so hard last night. Mentally, you just have to be like, you know what, my ankle hurts, and instead of being like, oh well, maybe it won't get kicked, you're like, it's gonna get kicked and it's gonna hurt.
How have your trainers helped you deal with going and somebody going after your pain? Ben.
How have I learned to deal with pain in my 165 fights?
Is that a question?
No, that's your question. Oh, so the thing about learning how to train through pain, or how to deal with pain, or what I was just describing in like, well, my ankle hurts, but maybe it won't be a problem in the fight, rather than like, it is going to hurt, I am prepared for it to really, really hurt, is that whether something hurts or not, you can fool yourself, but you can really fool other people as well. I learned first from my trainer, Den, at Lana Muay Thai, that if you show someone that something affected you, and they're like, Den, they'll go after it. Yeah. Which I do now against my trainer, Pinu. I kicked him in the leg the other day, and I hit him like right on the nerve, and he kind of like buckled a little bit. And my first response was, oh shit, I just hurt my trainer, and I felt bad for a split second. And then that was gone, and I went after that leg again. Because do not show me that that hurts. It's like an invitation. If he had just pretended that it didn't hurt, I would have left it alone. But it's a mental changeover to not only myself not show that something is hurting because you don't want that person to know that they have a target, but also not showing it for yourself, because if I'm not like, oh my god, my ankle hurts so much, my ankle doesn't actually hurt that much. So that's why a lot of things might be painful after a fight that aren't in a fight, is that you can really mentally check out of a lot of those things. Mark Picos says that me and John should co-write a book about mental training. I don't think I could co-write a book with my brother. It would be a nightmare. We're very different personalities. He's very like Captain America, like he would have a schedule, and I'm a little bit more like, I don't know, 3 a.m. Sylvie is finishing up the conference paper that was due kind of thing. But yeah, well, maybe we'll do another Skype interview together, and I'll make a new blog post about it. It'd be interesting to talk to him, because I think the last time we talked was maybe 2 years ago, or I've talked to him since then. The last time we talked about mental training was 2 years ago.
That would be good, baby.
Thank you, Christina.
She says
it was, she'd love to hear more about mental training in the future, and it was great to watch you fight this morning.
Oh, that's awesome.
So right now we are driving down from Chiang Mai to Pattaya, which is like a 9-hour drive. We left very early in the morning because we're trying to make it to Bangkok within a semi-reasonable hour to go see my Ajarn, Ajarn P. Bangkateng, who does my Sakyan. We're going to have him re-bless my Mongkhan. For those who don't know what a Mongkhan is, it's the one that goes around your head. That's mine.
What's special about it?
I am obsessed with my Mongkhan. I love it because it's made out of a skirt that was my mom's when I was a kid, that I loved when I was a kid, and I could not wait until it would be mine, like inheriting it. And then it just got put in an ironing closet for probably 20 years, but it was always in my mind as like, this is my mom's skirt. And it was kind of this reddish tie-dye that looked like flames. And miraculously, my mom had saved it all these years. So when I wrote to her and said, I want that skirt to make a Mongkhan out of, she had it. So making a Mongkhan out of your mother's skirt is actually a thing. This was made by a P-boy who does custom shorts up in Chiang Mai. So I've got my amulet on the front there. You can see how gorgeous. It's like tiger stripes because of the flame skirt. And then this is from Ajahn P. It's a scroll that's got like an inscription inside of it for protection.
It responds with your Sakyan, though. tied to it.
The inscription is connected to the Sakyant that I have, which are also for protection. So we're going to see him. He has two offices. One is in Chiang Mai, but he's not there right now. Instead, he's in Rangsit, which is like north of Bangkok. So we'll probably get to him at maybe like 6 p.m. or something and just jump in and see him. It's always good to see him because he is my guide.
Well, what are we blessing there?
We are blessing my Mongkhan, my Prajat, which are the ones that go around your arms, which I actually never wore before, but I've recently got a really gorgeous pair from Piboy. So we're going to have those blessed as well. And then we bought a like tiger statuette, who's insanely heavy. I don't know what he's made out of, like cement or something. He's very, very heavy. But tiger energy is something that I'm really focusing on right now.
Why is that?
I have tiger Sakyant, for one, and they're very powerful. I feel that energy kind of connecting to what I'm working on in Muay Thai and the path that I'm trying to take, more now than ever before, and more now than when I first got the Sakyant. I think they've had to kind of seep in for 2 years. So I'm working on this energy, and so we got this tiger as kind of like a meditative, what do you call it? Like an object that's a focus. Vocab blank. So we're gonna have him blessed by Ajahn Pee, so that'll be cool. Joseph asks, is that why at the end of the fight last night you were smiling at your opponent, or just because you knew you were winning? I always smile at my opponents unless there's like a nasty attitude between us, which is very, very rare. Usually after the fight, you're friends immediately. I'd like that gym. I'd seen her last week and I'd seen her the night before, so definitely a smile was a very natural response to her. But smiling is a new thing for me in the ring. It's part of the freedom of fighting and being relaxed and having kind of a confident energy in what you're doing. If I had been losing, I don't know if I would have been grinning at her, but I hope that I would be, to show that I would still be relaxed in that situation. I think I'll fight her again, honestly. I think that she and I are really good in terms of challenges for our development. We have very, very different strengths. So I imagine I'm going to be fighting Nong Quan Tong a few times. Mark says, have you seen the tigers lately? What tigers?
Oh, up by Mayrim.
Oh, like Tiger Kingdom? No. I haven't seen real-life tigers in a really long time. We're going through a police checkpoint, so I might have to talk to a police officer in a second. When you drive through Thailand, there are all of these police checkpoints, and they pull over trucks, mostly, for, like, inspections. And they like to ask us where we're going. I don't know what they do with that information, like, if they just want to hear us talk that we're not crazy people. I don't know. They seem to be waving by. They're stopping. Okay. Yeah. We can go. What else? So did we already publish, or we're publishing Nam Ke Bun?
As soon as we get the internet going.
Kevin is my secretary, so I actually don't know what we're publishing.
Yeah.
So, Nam Ke Bun is amazing, and I love him. He's probably the most complete fighter I've ever seen. He's from the golden age in the 90s, and he was the title holder at 130 pounds for 6 years, which is insane, because 130 pounds is like such a perfect weight range. Like, it was very, very competitive weight range. But so I did a private session with him in Karat, and he's just incredible. The things that he taught me and the way that he teaches me and just his energy is just really inspiring. I've been really inspired by him, and adopting the things that he showed me into my training and trying to get it in the ring with me. And so we're releasing to my patron supporters 20
About 30 minutes.
About 30 minutes of that session. And he shows some really cool stuff. He was known as the body throw expert, and he shows me some body throws in that private training video. So I'm excited to be publishing that. I was writing the introduction to that in the hotel room between fights. So that's really cool.
There's already an hour of that on the... A separate, different hour of that on Nak Moi Nation.
There's a 1 hour of that private for Nak Moi Nation. And you can see that at Nak Moi Nation as a member. But he shows a lot in that. It's separate. It's a different set of things that he's showing in that hour than what I have for the patron supporters. Yeah. Hey, Two, what's up? He's like the police. Went through the police point. Francois, did you find your hop in was working for you last night?
Mm.
I noticed your opponent put you off balance with low kicks to your shin.
Yeah.
So the last time I fought that same girl last week, I was hopping in also, but I have this bad habit of like bringing my knee in like straight in front of me a little bit so that when I get kicked, I actually get spun. This is something that my first trainer, Master K, made a really big deal about, which is that you have to hinge your hip open a little bit so that when you get hit, the door doesn't flap shut. Like, basically, it's a, like, stop jam. And I wasn't doing that. And the reason that my leg comes in is a slight lack of confidence or intimidation of being kicked, which is ridiculous because if I would just open a little bit more, I wouldn't be afraid of being kicked because it solves the kicking problem. It's like not putting your hands up because you're afraid of being hit in the face. It's really stupid. But I was aware of that. So in this fight, I wanted to put my leg out a little bit more, and I think it actually has to do with my back foot. My back foot needs to be like a sprinter facing forward a little bit more, and instead I tend to like angle it out at 45 degrees a lot, and it messes a lot of things up, and it makes me turn my left side a little bit, which I know is something you got to work on. But so when I was hopping in, I was hopping in much better than I was last week, but because my ankle was already jacked and she had already hurt me last week doing the exact same thing, she was just nailing my leg. So, I was getting spun a little bit, one, because of the angle of my knee, but also because she outweighs me by, like, 8 pounds, maybe more, something like
no
that.
No more, yeah.
She's, like, 5 kilos, 4 kilos difference. It's, like, 12 pounds.
Yeah, maybe 13 pounds, yeah.
Yeah, she's big. But the hop in is absolutely necessary as a smaller fighter to cover that distance. I think my hop in made a huge difference. And I just need to be slightly better at it.
Sometimes
small adjustments.
You just take the damage. That's...
It's Muay Thai. You get hit. Yeah. You're going to get hit as you're trying to do things. Christina, can you recommend some other female fighters I can watch video footage of to get some inspiration and styles? That's difficult because it's hard to find footage on women.
Yeah.
Chomani Teheran, hard to spell, but you'll find her. Chomanee, Chomani. She's incredible. She is a champion out here. She fights at like 54 to 56. And she's just, she's not super aggressive in that she's not always going forward, but she has this amazing confidence, and she hits so hard. She won Muay Thai Angels, which is like a million baht competition. Her footwork is really great. She does this like herky jerky dance shuffle step thing that's not like Sanchai, but she like fakes coming forward and then kicks on the opposite side. It's really cool. Loma is awesome. She's my weight, and she fights for IFMA, so she does a lot of like international fights, so you can find those on IFMA fight cards. She doesn't fight under the name Loma when it's IFMA because you have to fight with your real name, but she's, I think they label it as Loma on most of those.
We have a thread of great female fighters.
If you go to
on
my
round table.
If you go to my Muay Thai forum, which is 8limbs.us Muay Thai forum, you'll find a thread that's actually great female fights. So you can find the fighters by looking at those fights and then follow their careers. And add to it, please, if you find really exciting female fights. I like Saya Ito. There's not a lot of footage on her. She's Japanese. Tanon Chinook is fun to watch. She's so badass. She looks like a poster all the time in her perfect technique. There's a really good fight of her defending her WPMF 108-pound title against Sophia Tarkos from Canada. And that was in, I think, August. No, April. It was in April of this past year, so you can find that online somewhere on YouTube. That was a very exciting fight. Paul is asking me fight 168. Last night was fight 165, so fight 168 is not yet scheduled. Female fighters. People really love Amon Barlow. She's very exciting to watch. She fights a lot, so there's actually a lot of fights, but I don't know if a lot of them have video. But if you look for Amon Barlow, you will find footage, and she fights frequently enough that you probably will have, like, things coming up on your feed if there's video of it. She should be fighting at Lion Fight soon. Paul, do you think you'll have 200 fights by the end of the year? No, because I'm at 165 and there's 1 month left in this year. So I think it'll take maybe a year and a half or 2 years to make it to 200 from where I am right now, just because fights get clustered, or you might have like a time when you don't get as many fights as you need to keep up that range. But I think that I think within a year and a half or 2 years it should be. I tend to average about 35 fights a year, so that would be in exactly a year from now if that keeps up.
Look how pretty, man.
See if I can show you guys this. So I don't know when my next fight is. I talked to the promoter directly after my last two fights. The way I got these last two fights from last night and the night before was that last week when I fought for him, he came up to me after the fight and immediately asked me if I could fight on the 16th. And I said, if you can give me two fights, I'll come up. So he did, which is awesome. So I don't know when my next fights are, but I told him after the fights that I'd love to fight for him again. So talking to different promoters around, seeing where I can go, and trying to get the next thing set up is kind of how I work, is that I'm always setting up the next fights, and fighting in these clusters seems to be kind of my pattern at the moment. But I actually really like it because, one, you don't have to have a lot of anxiety about any one fight when you have two fights. It totally takes the pressure off of both of them. But then on top of that, I think I fight better when I have two right in a row, maybe just mentally, but also because when I'm hurt already, like, I kind of have this Hulk thing where once I get hit, I kind of feel more able to move forward or be aggressive. It's like, okay, you've opened the can, now it's ready to go. So fighting twice like that, or fighting with some pain or fatigue or whatever the thing is from the fight before, I think is actually really good for me, as masochistic as that sounds.
You're undefeated in 18 back-to-back fights.
So Kevin says, I've had 18 back-to-back fights and I'm undefeated in the back-to-back fights, which is cool. And people have asked me, how do you fight back-to-back like that? Doesn't it hurt? The way I figure it, and this is because of the way I train, because I train with pain and when I'm tired and all these things anyway, so I've definitely built up to it, but I'm gonna be sore and tired anyway, so I can be sore and tired at home doing nothing, or I can be sore and tired fighting, and I like fighting, so I'd rather get two for the price of one and just, you know, add a few more sore spots to it. I like it. Francois, I like your crumple backwards throw from your fight two nights ago. I think you did a video about clinch grip and basically collapsing your opponent. Do you mean like when I collapsed her against the ropes?
That was Tenanchino, where on the far rope, where I said you need to drag her head forward, and then she put her hips in, and then you like crunched her backwards. You've done that before. It's when you bend them backwards down to the ground.
But not a foul?
It's not a trip or a foul. It's just a crush back.
Yeah. I think that because the way I train at my gym, the reason I initially went to Petrang Rung is because they had young boys for me to clinch with, and I wasn't getting any clinching up at Lana, which was really hard for me. And it was just the circumstances of the way the gym was at that time. It seems that they're actually getting much more clinching there, the women that are there now, which is really cool. But the reason I initially went to Petrang Rung was to clinch with these kids. They were closer to my size. And that's really where I learned how to clinch. But those boys who I initially started training with are now all much bigger than me. So the majority of my training partners are bigger than I am just because I'm a small person. And I think that that clinch move has grown out of me working against people who are larger than myself. In that you have to use strength to a certain degree because of the way that I am and the way I operate. But you don't want to rely only on strength because you'll wear yourself out and it's not always accessible. So you really want to move to technique and angles as well. And so that is a combination of the strength first, technique second, which I've been working a lot on. I've been trying to take strength out of my clinching, which is difficult, but is amazing. It's really good.
How are you trying to take it out? What are you doing to take it out?
So one of the things that I'm doing right now when I'm clinching at the gym is I'll purposefully choose this is going to be a no strength clinch session. So what that means is I have to move a lot more. You can't hold in a lock, which is difficult because I love to lock. It's a little bit of a safety thing. And when someone's bigger than you, you just want to lock to feel secure to throw what you want to throw. The problem with that is that you may not feel secure and you may lock and just do absolutely nothing and you might burn your arms out.
And the ref breaks you.
Yeah. So I'll choose, like, I'm not going to do any strength in this. And so you basically, you do a lot more swimming and changing of angles and try to use timing more than anything. So with strength, you really want to get a good lock and kind of like move people.
Dig your head in.
When you're not using strength, everything is timing. So you want to off balance someone while they're swimming, or you want to wait for their knee and do like a small tug. So I've been trying to like pull backwards a lot more. You can't super strength everything when you're pulling people backwards, but they also can't use their strength when they're being lurched forward.
Talk about this backwards thing. And Joe Hong Tong.
So I did a private session with Joe, who's Hong Tong Noi. And he owns with his twin brother Hong Tong Muay Thai in Chiang Mai. So he's a Muay Thai fighter, and he was talking about how he like 80% of the time likes to go backwards, and when he was pulling me around backwards I could feel exactly why he's so keen on it. It's basically like you don't have to use your strength, but you're constantly off balancing your opponent so that they're constantly trying to regain their balance rather than throwing something, because it's really hard to throw something when you're not on balance, and it's really hard to look good when you're not on balance. So in fighting, as a Muay Thai fighter, generally you're moving forward, but the minute you grab up in the clinch you kind of start moving backwards, or pulling people backwards. That trying to use locks that then move into another position instead of just muscle locking is kind of the next stage of the things that I'm working on. And so far it's been going pretty well. I think that I'm better at it in training than I am in fights at the moment, just because of the pressure of fights and it's somewhat new to me. But it has been introduced into my fighting much faster than a lot of the other things that I've been trying to introduce have, which I think is because it is somewhat natural to my constitution and what feels good to me. Something that I learned from Sakman Khan is that you will do the things that feel good to you. So find the things that feel good and work really hard on those. The caveat is that you can't be comfortable all the time, so you can't only work on things that you like, but you will default to the things that you like. So if you like kneeing, you're a knee fighter. That's how it goes.
Well, and you find the style. There's probably a style out there that captures these things that you like doing.
Yeah.
Like, as you discovered, you are a Muay Thai fighter, even without being able to train clinch.
Yeah, it's like liking music. Like, you don't, you know, you just gravitate towards certain music. Maybe you like the rhythm, maybe you like the pace, like whatever the thing is, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't mean that if you are a crazy person who loves ska, because who the hell loves ska, maybe you're way into that. Or maybe you're someone who just loves power ballads, like you're just way into power ballads, and that's okay. It doesn't mean you don't like other music and you can't incorporate other things into it. But when you sing in the shower, you're going to be singing power ballads. It's just how it goes. So, yeah.
How do you think you discovered that you're a more cow fighter? I was dang, kind of, right?
I don't know. It might have even been a little bit of Tae Win.
Oh, yeah?
When I was at Lana, I didn't really know what my style was, just because it was at a part in my development that it wasn't really defined yet. And because I'm small, people have always tried to direct me towards being a femur, like, evasive jumping around fighter, because that's how small fighters fight. It's not natural to me. I don't like it. It doesn't bode well for me when I try to. I'm getting better at it now. I'm like starting to bring pieces of it in, but pieces that I like, that I identify with, rather than it being pushed on me. But my first trainer at Lana was this guy Tae Win, and he is the first person who was like, I think you're an inside fighter, so we're gonna make you an inside fighter, which means not hopping out and staying at a distance and like doing this kind of bouncing around thing. And the minute he started working with me on that, it felt really good. In that it was like, yes, I like buckling down when someone's hitting me and staying in rather than like trying to, you know, dodge out of it or whatever. And so I think it's been, a slow recognition of like finding pieces of fighting that I identify with. And other pieces that are just much harder for me and that I don't really feel good doing. But discovering, or at least identifying with being a Muay Thai fighter, I think has been a slow progression. And it was even just realizing that that is a fighting style to itself. Yeah. I didn't realize that there were categories of fighting, because it was never, I was not exposed to it, and it was never assumed that that's what I would be or anything like that. So I think that it's the same thing that when you discover art or something that speaks to you and you're like, that's me, that spoke to something in me that I didn't necessarily recognize before. That's how I discovered as a Muay Thai fighter, is that it slowly revealed itself to me as like anamnesis. Yeah,
but then there's this weird thing that's now happening with Karahat and Nam Kabun, you're discovering this other thing you love.
This is the other thing that's crazy, is that, so I'm like, okay, yeah, knee fighter, which sounds like really obvious that you know what a knee fighter is because it's got two words in it. So it's like, that's clearly described. There are categories of knee fighters too. There are different types of knee fighters. So it's, again, sinking deeper into greater levels of understanding of these different styles. So whereas I had to resist the jumping around thing and really buckling down and just being like a tank for a while in order to stop being afraid of being hit so much, I had to like push that stuff to the side and be like, this is what I do. But then when I went and worked with Karahat, who is my fucking favorite, I love him, and Nam Kabun, who's so amazing and I really identified with, in working with both of them, they would show me something, and I'm pretty good at imitating people, but I would do it with a kind of like passion in it that you don't see automatically unless it's something that you really identify with. And that's actually bringing in a lot of the elements that I initially threw out in order to become more tank-like. So I became a tank, and now we're starting to take like some of the treads off so that it can like go in different directions and stuff like that. So you're constantly like rebuilding yourself and carving things out. It's not like a point A to point B and now you're finished kind of thing. It's like Mr. Potato Head, like you just have endless pieces that you keep.
It's like you started with a tank chassis and now you're building something on top of it in a weird way.
Joseph asks, after how many fights did your coaches at Lana start working on your fighting stuff? I don't know. Not a whole lot. It was definitely within the first year that Tae Win was saying, I think we need to make you an inside fighter. I think I'd lost a few.
Yeah.
I was fighting this chick named Yod Ying like a million times. I thought I'd fought her a ridiculous number of times overall, but when I look at it, I've fought other girls the same number of times that I fought her. It's like 12. But when you have to rematch people, you have to keep adjusting. It's actually really cool to rematch because it forces you to change. I think you go left here.
Yeah.
But I think that it was maybe within the first 8 months that they started adjusting my style. And then I actually moved off of Tae Win and got a different trainer at the same gym, which is very complicated.
I think Tae Win started it. And then when you went to Den, he's a female fighter. But then when you went to Dang, Dang got excited by it.
Yeah. So these are all fighters within, I mean, these are all trainers at Lana. So Tae Win left to go abroad. He was teaching in the Philippines. And I kind of got picked up by Den, who was the head trainer at the time. And he is not Muay Thai, like, at all. He's a very femur, evasive, jerky fighter. He's really cool to watch. He does this, like, hair-slicking thing when he's fighting that I like to imitate. But so he's not a Muay Thai fighter, so he's not like, this is how you fight as a Muay Thai fighter, because he's not into it. But Dang, who corners for me now when I go up, hope I'm back, he identified the Muay Thai elements in me, and he's very fight-oriented in the way that he trains, which I love about Dang. You can see my Dracula Guard training with him. He's a really, really good trainer. And I think that Dang was the one who really started developing it in me at Lana, partially because it was the right time for me to start developing it, and also because the way he taught me, it landed well with me. Like, I was able to understand it and work with it.
Very simple.
It's very simple. It was not like, and now you do the jumping fly knee. It's like, and then you punch him in the face with knee. So,
talk about how in a Muay Thai camp, instead of there being the style, you have all these different trainers that have different styles.
So typically yeah. In a Muay Thai camp, it's not a universal style. I think people kind of have this romantic idea that you can, like, identify a gym based on how people fight, which in America, I think you can. Because everyone just has the same trainer. You have, like, one trainer in a gym. In Thailand, you have multiple trainers in a gym who have all very different and sometimes very conflicting styles, and they will all show you something. So, if at the beginning, you might have a little bit of a hard time because people will show you literally opposite things and train you away from something that you just learned.
Yeah, put your
the mental... thing you need to grasp when you first get here is none of it's wrong. All of it is good, and whatever feels good to you, that's the right one for you. So if you do not like turning your foot before stepping forward, don't do it. But when that trainer yells at you, do it for a minute and then go back to the way that you like. Typically speaking, in a Muay Thai gym in Thailand, you'll have all of these different styles and samplings. And you may not get to train with all of the trainers. Usually you kind of get paired off with one who becomes, like, your main trainer. But you can steal things from people all the time. You can watch them, show them what they're showing other people.
Ask them.
It's amazing. They'll show you. They love... Being a teacher has status, so they're really just workers in a gym, which is very low status. But if you ask them, show me something, you make them a teacher, and it's nice. And you learn things, so it's really good. But you can learn a lot of different styles and kind of piece it together, like Frankenstein it yourself, which is awesome. Elizabeth, a couple of your recent fights were against girls bigger than you. Please tell us what adjustments you make to account for the size difference. Most of my fights are against girls bigger than me. Not necessarily as big
just
a difference as that girl I fought last night. Do you know what the percentage is?
68%.
My secretary has told me that 68% of my fights are against girls bigger than me. So I don't know, because I normally fight girls bigger than me, I don't know that I would call it an adjustment, because my adjustment is actually towards fighting girls my size, because it's less often. So the adjustments I've made overall in my style, because I fight girls bigger than myself all the time, is that you have to stay pretty close, and you are going to get hit. Against a bigger opponent, you kind of have to try to wear them down. I wrote a blog post about this recently that compared it to in those movies where, like, the little guy jumps on the giant robot and has to, like, take it apart from the inside while it's still walking, or, like, the in Star Wars, where they like put the little ropes around their legs and stuff. It's kind of like that. Like, you're the small guy, and so you want to stay inside and kind of pull the battery out of a bigger opponent. There are fighters who are very evasive, like Sanchai or Smart, who can like stay out of the power of a larger fighter, but it's very hard for me to beat a larger opponent that way, because I'm not really a point fighter. So my way of adjusting is to basically like weather the storm and wear everyone down from the inside, whereas there are other people who basically try to frustrate the hell out of their opponent, and they're really, really good at it by staying away. They're really annoying femur fighters. So there are two ways of doing it, and the way I do it is to find that sweet spot when someone's longer than you, which usually if they're bigger, they're longer. You find the sweet spot inside their reach where they don't have power, and you want to stay kind of in there. And then on top of that, because they're bigger, it's going to be harder to move them or to affect them right away. So the adjustment is patience. Like, you have to know that that first leg kick may have just bounced off of her, but if you do it a few more times, it's going to start to hurt. If you try to move them in the clinch and you can't quite move them, don't be frustrated. They're big. They'll get tired and you can start moving them. So patience and finding that sweet spot that cuts off their reach is mainly the adjustments I make. You fight often in Chiang Mai.
Who said that?
Keith. You fight often in Chiang Mai. What do you do during all that travel time from the south? This on the way back. We try to get some work done on the road, but there's not a whole lot that you can do just because of, you know, Wi-Fi and having to plug things in, stuff like that. So it's a little bit of downtime to be able to, me and Kevin, talk about things that we need to do for the website, or kind of strategizing stuff that you don't necessarily have time to think about when you're training and actually writing the things and all that kind of stuff. So it's a little bit of a break, like an exhausting break, because you're in the car for 9 hours. But it's also kind of a planning, like figuring out the stuff that you want
to
do.
We also try to book training sessions to film.
We always try to create like another thing that we can do on the way, because we've already rented the car and already taking time away from training. So we'll try to put something in on the way home. So a few times I've done private sessions like in Bangkok for content on the way home, or we'll stop in Lampang and see Ajahn Burglar. We just saw him today. So it's kind of like trying to fill that space and time with as much value as possible.
Plus, it's beautiful. We like being on the road, no? A little bit?
I like road tripping.
Yeah.
Kevin and I get to spend time together, which we actually don't get a lot of time together, because I'm always either at the gym or we're both working in the middle of the day,
or
I sleep. So it's it's basically like the time that Kevin and I get together is sitting in the car on the way up and down places. Yeah, it's good. I'm starting to lose my voice, so I'm actually going to go. But thank you guys so much for being on this live feed with me, and for asking questions, and for your support. And I will talk to you guys soon. Hopefully I'll have my next fight set up shortly. Send me questions. Send me questions if you have any on the forum or on my Facebook page about mental training, or anything that you kind of want to see. And I'll try to get to it. Hello, Javier from Mexico. All right, I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.